Chapter 13. Port Sanctus. Vesperilli System. The politicking was, for the moment at least, forgotten. The endless charade of seniority and command had given way to a higher, purer purpose. Not in all his life as a naval officer had Raphael Kulik witnessed anything as grand as he did the day the fleet of the Segmentum Solar fought the Orcs at Port Sanctus. The reality of the situation was relayed by cold schematics on the main bridge display. But Kulik had seen enough battle that he could picture what was happening with his mind's eye. The flickering runes on the massive screen were more than just blue and red symbols. Each was a starship of the Imperial Navy. The smallest were the frigates, destroyers, and other escorts, small clusters of sigils representing squadrons 3, 4, and 5 ships strong. Some were only a few hundred yards in length, just large enough to mount a warp engine, crew compartments, and a lance turret or torpedo tube. At the other end of the scale were the 4 battleships. Like the Colossus, each was a fortress, teeming with a crew of thousands, several miles long, and laden with enough weaponry to raise cities and lay waste to continents. Colossus was not suited to the main line of battle, hence the flagship's position with the other carrier assets at the heart of the fleet. Kulik's role, along with the cruisers Majestic, Knightly Endeavour, and Lasutia, was to provide fighter and bomber support for the rest of the fleet. From this position, Admiral Price would also be able to monitor the progress of the battle and make adjustments to the plan as required. The massive Ascension-class battleship, Honorable Destruction, was leading the port line under the command of Captain Tayagas, while the Unfriendly Encounter and Bloodhawk, 2 Retribution-class vessels, formed the point of the starboard flotilla. Behind the behemoths came an assortment of grand cruisers and cruisers, arranged as per the orders of Admiral Price, to deliver a spread of torpedoes, weapons battery fire, lance shots, and some minimal launch capacity. Their plasma engines leaving trails across the firmament, the 2 lines of ships forged through the void towards the glittering spread of the Orc-held asteroid belt. There were tens of thousands of individual asteroids in the field, millions probably, scattered across thousands of cubic miles. Many were chunks of ice no larger than fists, but on the larger and more stable asteroids, the Orcs had built fortresses, equipped with missile batteries, energy weapons, and strange warp-powered displacement cannons. Added to this were the so-called rock forts, large asteroids fitted with engines and shields, turning them into crude starships. More conventional Orc vessels were loitering within the cover of the debris field too. Blunt, gun-heavy raiders and larger attack ships the equivalent in strength to cruisers. For the moment, they were trying to hide, lying dormant until the lead elements of the fleet came into range. However, whatever advances the Orcs had made in their gravity and warp technology, their discipline and radiation shielding had not improved with them. Flares of energy and sensor bursts constantly betrayed the Orcs' positions to the more sophisticated scanning arrays of the Colossus. This information was relayed to the rest of the fleet as they continued to close with the enemy. 37 ships of the line in total. 37 capital ships gathered in one place for a single purpose, to crush the Orc outer defences. Along with the 2 dozen escort vessels that swarmed around them, these ships would have been enough to stir Kulik's heart and fire his resolve. The fact that they were only a third of the Imperial Navy forces in the system almost made him burst with pride and excitement. Sweeping on an arc a few 100,000 miles in system of the Rimwood fleet was Lansung's immediate command, the expedition force of the battle fleet Solar. There were no less than 7 battleships among the 18 capital ships in the task force, enough firepower to wipe out entire civilizations. Lansung's ships would interpose between the Rimwood flotilla and the 100 or more Orc ships in close vicinity to the attack moon in orbit around the 6th world. Further out, towards the system edge, 100,000 miles from the Colossus, Commodore Semes was leading the remains of the Segmentum Solar Corward fleet. Under the tentative command of Acaria, The fleet had lost nearly a third of its strength to repeated orc attacks, although it was still roughly equal to the Rimwood fleet in raw numbers. More damning had been the sapping of morale, Kulik was sure. He knew Raphael Semmes by reputation, and although another of Lansung's favourites, the Commodore certainly was regarded as bolder and more decisive than a carrier. At the moment, his flagship, the Torrent-class battleship Widow's Grief, was leading the Corwood fleet on a charge to unite with Price's command. The two fleets would intersect the asteroid fields from opposite directions, roughly 50,000 miles apart. At that stage, the Corwood fleet would come about alongside the Rimwood fleet, and together at last they would turn and rendezvous with Lansung in preparation for the next phase of the attack. Such was the plan, at least. It was, on the face of it, a sensible strategy. The vagaries of warp travel meant that any fleet travelling as a mass would be scattered to some degree, and it was standard Navy protocol for fleets to rendezvous at a predetermined point in the target system. A carrier, for reasons neither Kulik nor Price had been able to fathom, had been so intent upon striking a blow against the orcs as soon as he arrived, possibly to ensure Price gained no share of the glory, that he had not allowed for fleet consolidation and had jeopardized the entire endeavour. The dramatic but drastic measures now required were the consequence of that headstrong action. The strategic display was orientated with the Colossus at the centre, so that the two lines astern of the Rimwood flotilla stretched up and down the main screen, the clusters of escorts at set intervals along their length. Kulik stood in his usual spot, hands clasped behind his back. Price was just to his right, arms crossed as he stared at the range counter on the display. When it reached the agreed limit, the Admiral spoke up. "Captain Kulik, please signal the fleet to assume ascending line by echelon to starboard." "Aye, aye, Admiral." Kulik turned and nodded to Schaffenbeck, who passed the order to the communications officers. "Ascending line by echelon to starboard." The manoeuvre was basic, but no less impressive because of that. Over the next few minutes, starting with the rearmost vessels, the two lines of capital ships started to drift up and to starboard, while the front ships drifted down and to port. This created two parallel diagonal lines, slightly overlapping on one plane, but with the tail of the port line several thousand miles above the front of the starboard line. In this formation, the prow weapons of every ship could be brought to bear, and Price wasted no time taking advantage of this fact. "Fleet to fire torpedoes, full spread, three salvos." The order repeated down the ranks, and a few seconds later the main display bathed the bridge with yellow light. The screen was filled with the registers of nearly 100 plasma, atomic, and cyclonic torpedoes surging towards the orcs. Kulik followed their progress, followed by the second salvo, and then the third was on its way before the first wave of torpedoes had hit. "Main view, mid capture ahead," said the captain, grinning. He glared at Price. "I want to see this." The Admiral smiled in return, a little pensively, but Kulik had no time to worry about what concerns might be burdening the thoughts of his superior. The torpedoes were almost on their target. The closest peeled open, launching dozens of plasma and nuclear warheads each. There was no need for enhancement or magnification. One moment the screen showed the asteroid field, dimly glittering in the light of the distant star. The next, blossoms of pale blue and white erupted from one side to the other, blotting out the stars. Detonation after detonation rippled across the void, here and there the darker oranges and reds of secondary explosions or the whirling, spiralling electrical storms unleashed by cyclotronic expansions. Then the second wave caught up with the first, and the display was repeated in all of its glory. And by the time the third wave of torpedoes struck, debris had formed glittering sprays of light that twinkled and spread across the whole display. On a secondary screen, dozens of enemy marker sigils winked out of existence. There were cheers from the assembled officers who stood as one, transfixed by the destruction. "Beautiful," muttered Kulik, eyes wide with awe.
"All speed ahead,"
barked Price, who appeared unmoved by the whole experience.
"Carrier flotilla is to launch all wings and take up support positions. Form lines of attack by squadron and prepare to engage the enemy."
Snapped out of his appreciative fugue, Kulik relayed the order automatically.
"Lieutenant Schaffenbeck, stand all air crews to readiness. Gun crews are to await the command. Main display to tactical. The view on the huge screen switched from the fading glow of the torpedo detonations to a tri-D representation of the asteroid field, with the two lines of the Rimwood fleet approaching from beneath. The pair of columns were breaking apart as the cruisers and battleships assumed squadron formations outlined by Price before the engagement had begun. Shorter-ranged ships moved to the fore of the attack.
Colossus to primary carrier group, Kulik announced. Form on our position and launch interceptor wings. Bomber wings to be held in reserve until targets have been designated.
The captain nodded to Schaffenbeck, who gave the order for the flight decks to launch their fighters. The torpedoes had driven the orcs from their hiding places like beaters setting game birds to flight on a hunt. The alien vessels broke this way and that from the asteroids, scattered by the devastating salvos. Most came directly for the Imperial fleet. Whatever subtlety they might have possessed, now lost through a combination of battle excitement and fear. The first orc ships headed straight for the Honorable Destruction, seizing on the closest enemy to hand. They could not have picked a less suitable target, as the Ascension-class ship opened fire with its long-range prow batteries, smashing the shields of the oncoming orc ships with blazes of shells and rockets. Lance turrets arrayed along the dorsal spine of the battleship opened fire as it slowly changed heading to starboard. Beams of pure energy sliced through the shieldless orc attack ships, turning one, then another, and then a third into exploding clouds of fragments and gas. Behind the dissipating remains of these vessels, the remaining orcs did their best to alter course away from the Honorable Destruction. Their maneuvering was slow and clumsy, and by the time they had arranged themselves on the new headings, the Bloodhawk and the unfriendly Encounter had parted from each other, creating a gap of several thousand miles between them for the enemy ships to pass through. The two battleships opened up with their full broadsides as the orcs made a dash for the open stars between them. The void was filled with plasma bursts and the blur of immense projectiles. The first four orc ships, none of them larger than an Imperial destroyer, were utterly annihilated by the outpouring of fire. Two more were surrounded by the crackling auras of their overload shields, while the rest hastily burned navigation thrusts in a fresh attempt to assume different courses. By now, the lead elements of the fleet were moving inside the dust and gas clouds that shrouded the edges of the asteroid field. Dragging his eyes away from the display, Kulik glanced at Price, who was standing bolt straight, jaw clenched. Although he had voiced no concerns earlier, it was obvious that the Admiral was unhappy about entering the asteroid field. He looked full of nervous energy, trembling slightly, fists clenching and unclenching by his sides as he held himself immobile against the urge to pace or speak. A few rock forts and asteroid bases had survived the torpedo onslaught, but not enough to cause any real harm to the lead battleships. The three massive vessels were bathed in the purplish glow of their void shields as they ploughed through the swirling gases and dust. Missiles streaked past the ships from deeper within the field, launched by the orc bases. Seven orc ships, three of them at least cruiser-sized, had broken past the battleships. Instead of heading into open space, the orcs could not fight their warrior desires, and the alien vessels were turning for a confrontation with the cruiser lines of the fleet. It was a fight they could not hope to win, but Kulik had seen suicidal bravery before and knew that the Greenskins could inflict considerable damage before they were destroyed. It was important to remember that this was simply a linking of the two fleets. The greater battle was yet to come. Every ship damaged or lost now would be sorely missed in the fight against the attack moon.
"Should we move in to support, Admiral?" said Kulik. "Our bombers can deal with the smaller orc ships while the cruisers deal with the larger ones."
"No," said Price.
"All bomber wings remain on standby. We're going to need every attack craft we can field if we're going to take on that Orc Star base."
"Understood, sir," said Kulik.
The captain rubbed his chin, an instinctual action he had developed long ago in preference to showing dissent to a superior. The distraction always helped him hold his tongue. In this case, he thought it unwise to risk the larger ships in exchange for some bombers, but he was not going to argue with Price about it.
"Send word to Blue, Magenta, and Gold squadrons to intercept at first opportunity," Price said, rocking back and forth on his heels. "Red and Black squadrons are to flank the battleships and scan for enemy ships and installations. None of the orcs are to escape. The last thing we need are damned greenskins dogging our heels when we go in for the final attack.
Aye, aye, sir, said Chaffinbeck, gesturing to transmit the Admiral's orders. The captain waited for any orders specific to his ship, but none were forthcoming. And the Colossus, sir? What are we to do?
The unspoken part of the question asked why a fully combat-capable battleship was being held back rather than committed to the attack. Price must have picked up on the captain's subtext.
No fresh orders, Captain, the Admiral said sharply, jaw clenched with irritation. The carrier group will remain on current station. I am not risking this ship and her launch capabilities just so that you don't feel left out, Raphael.
Aye, aye, sir,
Kulik replied with a nod of salute. He turned an eye towards the screen where the rest of the fleet were surrounding the orc ships and pounding them to ruin with their guns. Saul caught the captain's eye and subtly directed his superior to join him at the gunnery console a little further from the Admiral. Catching Chaffinbeck's gaze, the lieutenant overseeing the targeting matrices suddenly realized that he had urgent business at the comms desk and moved to attend to that duty, leaving the two officers alone with the monitoring servitors.
You seem agitated, sir, said Chaffinbeck, keeping his voice low as the two of them stood side by side, looking at the main display. A moment of pause and reflection might help you regain some equilibrium.
I don't know why Price is so reluctant to commit the flight wings, said Kulik. He's had further communication from Lansung, no doubt outlining the Lord High Admiral's plan for the attack moon.
And why is that such a cause for concern?
Chaffinbeck indicated the tactical display with a flick of his head.
The battle seems almost won.
Because if Price is under orders to keep the carriers at the back for this battle, it has to mean, as sure as a navigator's got a third eye, we're going to be slap-bang right in the front of the next one.